Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hi-yo. Welcome to Kiwi's Birth Tales. My brother name is Ollie and I'm Die Boy. Thank you for listening from Mommy's podcast. See you later.
Kia ora and welcome back to Kiwi Birth Tales. I am your host, Jordan. If you're new around here, I'm a mum of two. I've got Jai who's 4, Ali who's 2.5, and a business baby, Your Birth Project. If you're pregnant or you know someone who is, Your Birth Project is the online hypnobirthing course you need in your life. Like, you just need it. It's a non-negotiable. You need it. It is designed for all birth types. It doesn't matter if you're planning a home birth, a hospital birth, a C-section, a VBAC, a drug-free birth, a water birth. Like, literally doesn't matter. It is going to have something in there that helps you to have a better birth. It will give you all of the education, all of the knowledge that you need. I've got all different types of people who've done the course. First-time mums, fifth-time mums, midwives, nurses, doctors, literally so many people. If you want to read some of the testimonials, go to the Your Birth Project Instagram, or you can also find them on the Your Birth Project website as well. But you need it in your life. You need it. Oh, goodness me. I am so passionate about, like, the opportunity and the education and knowledge to have a better birth. And that is why Your Birth Project and Kiwi Birth Tales exist. But anyway, today I am speaking with Kate, and Kate is a beautiful mum of 3. She has had quite a challenging journey. She talks through some experience with pregnancy loss. She talks through her experience with having a child that was diagnosed with complications post-birth, so quite a while down the track after birth, and actually is only one of very few people in the world that suffer from Bear syndrome. So Kate talks us through what that has meant for her family, and then also growing her family from there through IVF and genetic testing. So a really interesting story. I was so grateful to Kate for being willing to share, and she's also very happy for anyone to reach out to her if you feel like you want to chat about Bear syndrome or different diagnoses in children or anything like that. So make sure you find Kate through my social media. I'll make sure I tag her in the post when this episode goes live. But yeah, I hope you love the episode. As always, I'm so grateful that you've chosen to have me in your ears today. I would love if you could leave me a review wherever you are listening. It helps people find the podcast. Make sure you're following or subscribing, and I will let you enjoy the episode now. Talk soon. Hey, Kate. Thanks so much for joining me on the Kiwi Birth Tales podcast today.
Kia ora, Jordan. I'm Kate Hamiora. I am mother to Hazel, who is 7 years old, nearly 8 actually. Tyka is nearly 3 years old, and Amaya is just 6 months old. And we live in Christchurch, New Zealand.
Amazing. Awesome. I'm very excited to have you on the podcast today to talk all things mum life. But why don't we start with what the journey to pregnancy was like for you?
So for me, I actually, my husband and I, we'd been trying for not actually too long. I think it was a couple of months, and I happened to get pregnant, which was amazing. This was after we'd got married, so we were very excited. We kept it from our families because my dad was, I think, having his birthday coming up, so we were going to surprise him at his birthday. I think it was probably maybe a week or two out from his birthday, I sadly miscarried. We had seen a heartbeat at 6 weeks, and then I think it was about 7 weeks I had a little bit of bleeding and a bit of pain, so I was like, oh, I went to the doctor. They sent me, said stay home from work and just kind of see what happens. And sadly I miscarried, which was it kind of not freaked me out, but it was just quite distressing. I can remember once I had once the next day, I think it was, they sent me for an ultrasound. And once I knew that the baby had passed away, I was like, oh, what do I do now? What happens now? And I was just like, didn't know what to do. I actually ended up calling it up in obstetrics office and was just like, what do I do sort of thing. As much as my doctor was there and that sort of thing and said, you know, it will usually pass naturally, that kind of thing, I was still, yeah, just needed some advice or something. Actually, one of the obstetricians jumped on the phone and was just like, well, it should pass naturally, you get a bit of cramping, that kind of thing. And I was like, okay. And he just made me feel so at ease. It was just so nice. Like, I hadn't signed up to the obstetric office yet, and I was planning to, but yeah, I just, yeah. And he, yeah, made me feel so much at ease. Didn't actually even get his name, don't remember his name, but it was actually later on I did find out his name, so that was quite handy. So then I think it was probably I rang up my mum and I told her in the same sentence, I was pregnant but I lost the baby. And yeah, it was pretty gut-wrenching. And then Dad's birthday came around, because I was in Auckland at the time, that's where we lived, and then my parents were in Christchurch, so the birthday was just a bit bittersweet as well, because we thought we were going to be sharing some exciting news. But fortunately, I fell pregnant I think a few months after that, which was amazing again. But we decided again not to tell people. And this time, it wasn't for a while. We didn't, I think it was probably about 12, 14 weeks, we started to kind of tell people a bit more. Didn't tell my work till I was actually 20 weeks. I just, I think, wanted to kind of keep it close. I don't know why. And I still to this day don't know why, but I just felt, I guess, more comfortable that way. So, so that was Hazel. So, pregnant with Hazel, and I had no worries through those early stages with her, so that was really fortunate. Scans went all fine. I actually signed up to the obstetrics office that I called, and the obstetrician that I'd actually talked to on the phone ended up being my obstetrician for my pregnancy with Hazel, which was amazing. So I'd already had kind of that connection, so that was and it wasn't until I'd kind of gone to see him and talk to him for a while that I realized the connection. So it was amazing.
How did you feel in your pregnancy this time, having suffered with a miscarriage the first time? Were you feeling anxious, or did you feel sort of like you were able to separate the two? And talk us through that.
So I definitely felt anxious through the whole pregnancy. And I think a lot of people, from what I understand, that when they've had a miscarriage, it's that every time you go to the bathroom, you're worried that you're going to miscarry or that you're going to find something. So, that was my kind of worry with that. But fortunately, it was all good. And then I think all the scans were all fine with Hazel. So it was a really typical pregnancy with Hazel. So no worries at all. The obstetrician that I went to, this was in Auckland, at every kind of meeting with him or appointment with him, he could scan as well. So that really reassured me. And that was probably part of the reason I went with him as well, knowing that I could have a scan every time I saw him, and just gave me that peace of mind. And that's probably also why I chose to go with an obstetrician over a midwife for my first pregnancy. So,
Awesome. And did you have many pregnancy symptoms throughout this first pregnancy?
I was, I had nausea, which was, now that I've had two more children since, it was too bad, in that way, but I think, obviously changes as you have more kids sometimes, nauseous and just really, really tired, and I think everyone attests to that, just that, tiredness really gets you, And like it's that afternoon tiredness where you're like just falling asleep at your desk sort of thing.
And how did you feel in terms of birth? Like, did you have many ideas about how you wanted your birth to go? Did you do any birth education or anything like that?
So we my husband and I we did an antenatal course, I think it was through Birth Care, and that was a couple of nights, I think, in 1 week, and just kind of an overall information on birth, and like you get the stories from friends and all that sort of thing, and you kind of do a little bit of research yourself online, which is probably not always the best thing sometimes. But I was kind of the opinion that I would just go with whatever kind of comes on the day somewhat. So because I knew that it couldn't be predicted what was going to happen. One thing I really didn't want was to be induced, because I just heard horror stories about people being induced. But in the end I actually was induced. So it just shows you that the stories you kind of hear, and then when it actually comes to the moment, you're like, okay, yep, let's just go with it sort of thing. Well, that's what I was like anyway, yeah.
Awesome. And how were you feeling towards the end of your pregnancy? Talk us through the sort of like third trimester, and how was everything tracking with your pregnancy? And yeah, how were you feeling?
So right near the end I was tracking fine. I'm a taller person, so I've just got a bit more room to carry a baby, and my babies have never been that massive, so that wasn't too bad. I did get the fluid retention that I think pretty much everybody gets near the end of it. But yeah, otherwise, yeah, all tracking fine.
Awesome. Cool. And take us through the sort of final week of pregnancy. How are you feeling? And then into your labor and birth story.
So I think I'd had taken work off, so maybe a couple of weeks before my due date. So I was just doing full on nesting, sorting through clothes, trying to get everything sorted. We'd actually decided that we were going to move back to Christchurch, just to be closer to family, and to have that family help. So we were renting at the time, so our rental, they needed it anyway. So we were busy trying to pack up our lives in Auckland and move to Christchurch. I think, yeah, I ended up deciding that I wanted to have Hazel in Auckland to stay under obstetrician up there, because if I transferred, it was just didn't have that relationship. So I had him all lined up, and then I think it was probably about a week out from due date, I had reduced movement. So I called up, or I messaged him, I think it was, and he was like, lie down on your bed, count how, if you can feel the kicks and that sort of thing. And then I could feel all that, and that was all good, but then it was still not like probably as much as I'd had. So he said, come into the hospital, we'll put you on a monitor. So went into the hospital, he put me on a monitor, and everything was fine. But he said, did say, let to be safe, let's induce you. And of course, when he said induce, I was like, oh no, I don't want to be induced. But he was like, it's not as bad as you think, and talked me all through it. And so he induced me. So he started induction, and I'm pretty sure that then we went home that night, then back the next morning for another dose. And then I think we were coming to the third dose, and I had kind of little bits of like what I'd call cramping, but nothing major. So I wasn't anywhere near labor, or my waters hadn't broken. Nothing was really happening. So the obstetrician was like, nothing's happening, this is going really slowly, let's just get baby out safely. I mean, him knowing my history of the miscarriage and how nervous I had been, he was like, let's do that. And he's like, I can either do it tonight, or we can leave it until the morning. And I said, well, if baby's fine, let's leave it till the morning, there's no point in rushing. And he's like, you go home, have a good night's sleep, which of course you don't, because all you're doing is thinking about it. And then the next day I came back, and then yeah, so We arrived in the morning, all prepped for a C-section. We were meant to be first on the list, and then we got bumped down it a bit because he had another birth, which was fine, until I heard another lady in the other room talking about it was her second C-section, and she was all nervous and quite upset. So then, of course, I got a little bit nervous as well. But of course, everyone around me reassured me and that sort of thing. And then they came and got me, the obstetrician. I went into theatre. Theatre, as anyone with having a C-section, it's very bright lights, and very sterile, which obviously it needs to be. You sit on the bed, and then as soon as I sat on the bed, I got the shakes, like the shivers. I seemed to be freezing in there or something. Could be nervous, I'm not sure. But they did the spinal, then lay me down. Yeah, just then everyone got in their place. And then I think a little while later, Hazel was born, and they lifted her up in front of me. And actually, we didn't actually tell family what we were having. So my husband and I knew we were having a girl, but we told everybody we didn't know what we were having. So it was great that we could then surprise everyone with Hazel, and that she's a little girl. And yeah, everything went, I guess, smoothly with the C-section. Hazel was all fine, all testing. She came out fine, no issues. Yeah. And then, yeah, we were, I guess, transferred to the ward, and we're fortunate enough to have our own room, which was amazing. And then a few days later went to birth care.
And do you remember, like, those first couple of nights, how did you find, you know, you're recovering from a C-section, you're trying to learn to feed a baby, like there's so many things going on, so how did you find those first few nights in hospital?
Yeah, they were full on, because you're not used to not sleeping.
Oh my gosh.
And there was no sleeping being done, pretty much. And just not being able to move that well to pick up your baby and feed your baby, because you're just moving, you're sore and you're moving very slowly. I was fortunate enough that my husband could stay. So he stayed on like a mattress on the floor in the room, which was such a help, because then he could get up and pass me Hazel in the night when I needed to feed. But I actually really struggled with feeding with Hazel. Her latch wasn't great, but also I just struggled to get it. Midwives were amazing at trying to get her to latch, and we eventually got her to latch, but her latch was never a strong latch, so she was never she never had a lot of strength. So even through birth care, it was the same thing. She was feeding, but she was just not feeding probably a lot.
And did you know, like, did they indicate that to you at that time, or were you just sort of going with it and it seemed like it was like relatively normal?
Yeah, just going with it, and it seemed all relatively normal. There was no indication that there was any major issues with her feeding at that point.
And how did you find going home from the hospital and from birth care, and talk us through those first couple of weeks?
So my mum had come up from Christchurch, so she had, which was very nice of her to get a house all ready. So she had done some food and a quick whip around cleaning. So it was amazing to get home after that. But you definitely get into reality when you get home. There was actually a lot of sleeping on the couch with Hazel and her bassinet beside, and that sort of thing. But the feeding, we had at that stage, we had a midwife coming into the house. And at that stage, the feeding still wasn't amazing, but we were getting wet nappies. So I pretty much think Hazel was feeding to keep hydrated. So there was one evening we were bathing her, and she was just really, really lethargic. And so I messaged the midwife and just said, she's really lethargic and she's not eating, like feeding very much. And we'd, by this stage, we'd tried bottles and stuff, but she hadn't really taken to a bottle either. So they said, You should probably get into Starship. So we went into Starship, and at that stage got into Starship and explained everything that had happened. And I think the midwife must have called ahead as well. And they kind of rushed us into a room where they had like kind of bright lights on her, and they were checking her out fully. Next minute they were putting a nasal gastric tube in, saying that this is the way we're going to need to get some into her. I'd had some express breast milk that I brought with me, so they were using that. And she was fine in all accounts. She just needed, she'd lost more than the 10% of her birth weight. So that's the other reason that they were like, you need to get in there. So yeah, there, so we were admitted for, it ended up with being there maybe over a weekend. And she then, I was up every few hours pumping. I didn't want to give her formula. I just wanted to give her breast milk. So I had to pump, and then, cause they had to measure how much she was getting. So that's why I had to pump, and then, just to make sure that I was getting kind of, she was getting enough, I guess, nutrition. And I don't know now why I had such an aversion to formula. I think it's probably a lot of the pressure that is out there on people that you should breast is best and breast milk's best. I know very different now, but when you're a first time mother, it's that pressure is, it's almost not, it's not in your face, but it is, it does make everyone, it's there, and it's not very nice. And I don't think, fed is 1,000,000% best is my philosophy, and should be everyone's philosophy. And I think probably even if you talk to pediatricians, that's exactly what they think as well. And so and so she'd put on a bit of weight. So then she was discharged home, and then I think it was about 4 or 5 days later, we actually moved to Christchurch. So we jumped on the plane, moved down to Christchurch. My husband drove with a friend the cars down, and we ended up staying with my parents just for those first few months until we kind of established ourselves and found somewhere to kind of live as a family. We, I think, were transferred into Plunkett, but we didn't have a midwife in Christchurch, so we ended up finding a GP practice. GP practice that we went to, Hazel was vomiting a wee bit, or refluxing. They had, one of the GP practices we went to just said, oh, she's just a spilly baby, kind of, it's what happens. So we're like, oh, I don't think it's just that. So we ended up going to a different doctor, and it was just through family friend of a friend sort of thing that we got to this doctor. And he was watched her closely with her weight, and she wasn't putting on a lot of weight. We went to like a baby massage class, and Hazel has roving eye movements, and they weren't typical. So the Plunkett lady who ran that, she was actually a Karatani nurse, so she was like, have you had that checked, just in a nice way, have you had it checked sort of thing. And I was like, no, I haven't. And I was like, okay, good to know. So we said something to the GP, and he was like, yeah, she hasn't put on weight in like a month or something like that. She seems fine in herself because she was hydrated, she looked all fine. But she was constantly feeding off me. So I feel like she was pretty much attached to me 24/7. She wasn't sleeping, screaming through the night. She just was not a happy baby. So he referred us to a pediatrician privately, saw that pediatrician. Unfortunately, they then told us that we have a difficult baby, kind of suck it up. And had recorded her weight incorrectly, so they'd added a whole kg to what her weight was. So of course her weight seemed fine then. So went back to the GP again, and he was like, no, that's not good enough, and rung up the hospital, talked to a pediatrician at the hospital, and said, you need to go into the hospital now. So went into the hospital and were admitted into hospital. They were like, no, not enough weight. We need to be putting a NG tube in. So they did that. They then found out that once they put the tube in and started feeding her what she should have been having, that she just vomited it all straight back up. So she was feeding off me little and often to keep herself hydrated, but not enough to put on weight. So then we had an NG tube in and we just had to kind of trickle it into her. And so that was a bit of a journey after that, and trying to keep an NG tube in. Anyone that has a child with an NG tube knows that they like to pull them out. So you're kind of in and out of hospital trying to get it put back in, or you need to learn it yourself, kind of figure out how to put it in yourself. So that was when Hazel was, I think, about 3 or 4 months old, that she ended up with that, and she's been tube fed ever since. So our journey after that was, she wasn't keeping that in, she kept vomiting the tube up, so they ended up having to put it jejunally, which is where they put it through the stomach and into the beginning of the bowel intestine. So it would go straight through to there, which means you then have to have it on a feeding pump and feed it in very slowly. So she was on that, but then she was vomiting that up, or she was more she was pulling it out, actually. So each time they did it, they have to actually x-ray to try and get it in the right place. So x-rays obviously aren't great for anybody, let alone a baby. So they were like, right, we need to look at the next option. So the next option was a Mickey button, which is like a tube through her stomach. They ended up doing that, and they did a surgery at the same time to help the stomach empty quicker, and also a wrap to stop her vomiting up. So this was when she was just, I think, hit 7 months old. She ended up having that surgery. So,
Did they give you like a diagnosis of anything at that stage, or like any indication of why that's what you were experiencing with her?
So at that stage, the only diagnosis we had had was failure to thrive. Hazel had low muscle tone, and we also saw a eye specialist, and she had nystagmus, which is like roving eye movements. So that sort of stuff was still kind of under investigation. As the kind of months went on after that, they did figure out that she has pale optic nerves in her eyes, and her retina can't correct her vision with glasses, and so the pale optic nerve is the nerve that runs from the eyes to the brain. So she, and she's got very low, like, short-sightedness, so really low vision, so she can't see a lot. But that was kind of, they needed to do tests while she was under and things like that, so that sort of stuff came out a bit later on, once she was under. And but she had an MRI came back like a typical MRI, so there were no issues with that side of things. So she was a wee bit of a medical mystery for them for quite a while.
And how were you and your husband coping? Like, that's obviously such a stressful experience, like, regardless of whether or not you've got children already, but to have that experience with your first baby, how were you guys coping?
I would say that for me, I was in the mode of just like kind of that mode where you just go, go, go. So I never really slowed down, because it was kind of that constant. So I didn't really have too much time to kind of sit and think about it. And it was probably not until a wee bit after, once we were kind of home doing the feeds and that sort of thing, that you're just like, man, this is full on. But because Hazel's life has been full on, like, so much, there's not a lot of time to kind of think. But when you do have definitely those moments, you have those moments of, oh my god, like, that's just so full on. And people talk about you grieving for the baby that you thought you were going to have, and I guess there is partly that, but for me, a lot of it because I haven't ha I didn't have a child before that. She was my first child. I didn't actually know any different, so I didn't know what a typical child, like their milestones were. So I think it was about 3 or 4 months, once I knew Hazel wasn't kind of tracking like a typical child or baby, I deleted the apps off my phone, the milestone apps, and just decided I didn't want to look at those anymore, and just go with her and her journey. And fortunately, the pediatrician wasn't constantly bringing them up as well, was more asking me about what's Hazel doing, you know, how is she, that kind of stuff, as opposed to saying, oh, she's not doing this yet, oh, she should be doing that, or she's not doing this, she's, yeah, should be doing this sort of thing. Yeah, so we were fortunate. I know others haven't always been fortunate like that. But yeah, diagnosis wise, we actually got a diagnosis for Hazel. I think she was about 2.5 years old. And she has a very rare genetic condition called Bear syndrome. There's only a handful of people in the world with it. And yeah, they couldn't have actually given us a diagnosis when she was born, or even before she was born, because the science wasn't there. So they hadn't actually kind of like been able to test and kind of discover that. So quite interesting once you figure out what what it means.
And what did that mean for you guys once you got that diagnosis? Like, how did that sort of change things for you? Did it change things at all? And yeah, I guess, what's life for Hazel like now?
So it didn't really change a lot in the way of what we do every day and what we do with Hazel. It changed in the way that you know now the reasons behind different things with Hazel, or different disabilities with Hazel. So that it's great to have that reason behind it, but yeah, it doesn't change your kind of day to day. But it also mean, but one thing it does mean is that I can now connect with other people around the world with children with the same condition. And because it is rare, there's only a few, so you can kind of see, what did you do with this, or have you experienced this? And that was really helpful. But that probably hasn't come until the last few years, because it was only until probably maybe when Hazel was 5, there was only one other child in the world that I'd found, and they were in Puerto Rico. So yeah, quite a crazy thing. But and then following on from that, I guess Hazel's life now. So Hazel did some modeling when she was, I think, 4 years old, for a clothing brand. So she was in her wheelchair and did some modeling for that. And that moment there was probably almost a little bit of a turning point for me, because it was like, I believed in Hazel and that she could do stuff, but it was more the fact that she could do something that a typical child can do. That kind of made me think, well, yeah, Hazel can actually do anything, sort of thing. Yeah. With her low vision, being in a wheelchair, with her low muscle tone, she can still do it. And the feedback we had on those photos was amazing, and very fortunate to have that opportunity. And she's since done a few more campaigns as well.
Awesome.
It's been amazing. So that's that part of it. And then Hazel's actually at school now, so she's 7 years old. So she's at mainstream school, so she's in mainstream with all the other kids. She has a full-time teacher aide, and teacher aide's amazing, and Hazel loves school. You ask her every day if she wants to go to school. She has a massive smile on her face. She just, yeah, like thrives at school, hates the school holidays because then she's stuck with mum.
Amazing. Cool. And why don't we use that, I guess, as a bit of a segue into your next pregnancy? So did you always want to have more than one child? How did you sort of make that decision between you and your husband? And yeah, what did that look like for you?
So we always, well, both of us, I know I always wanted to have more than one child. So I was kind of thinking two, but, you know, like just kind of if we were lucky enough as well. So Choosing to have a second for me was actually an easy decision in the way of just bringing, I guess, more vibrancy to the house, having someone for Hazel to communicate with, to be around. So that was easy decision. The hard decision was the fact that my husband and I are carriers of this genetic condition. So what that means is that we've got the 1 in 4 chance that a baby that we have or a child we have will have that genetic condition. So Hazel obviously has that genetic condition. So we could have 4 children and none of them be affected. We could have 4 children and all of them be affected. So for us, we decided that we didn't want to go down having a child naturally. Because if you have a child naturally, it could have the genetic condition again. And also to have two, for us to have 2 children with a genetic condition wouldn't be fair on anybody, mostly Hazel, because then we're having to split our time again. So that's kind of the decision we went. Also, you can do testing at I think it's about 15 weeks, but I wasn't prepared to go through that testing and then making that decision. So we were fortunate enough that we could do IVF. So we were put on the list to do IVF publicly. We actually got the call up when Hazel was in hospital really sick for an appointment. So we packed Hazel up and took her to the appointment with us, and then took her back to the hospital afterwards. And in that appointment, they just explained everything to us, where we could do PGD, which was diagnosis of to see if an embryo is a carrier of the genetic condition or not. So we went through the whole IVF process, which was full on the hormones, the injections. My husband ended up doing the injections because at that point I was sleeping next to Hazel still, so he was coming in and injecting me and going away again. So it was a bit of a process, but we, through that process, were fortunate to get 2 embryos. We actually decided to implant the first embryo. We went into lockdown on the Wednesday, I think this is 2020, and we had an appointment booked for the Thursday to do the transfer. So we'd had everything geared up, so we did the transfer on the Thursday. My husband couldn't come with me, so I had to go on my own, do the transfer, and then wait out the 10 days in lockdown to find out whether I was pregnant or not. And sadly, I wasn't pregnant, so that was really gutting. We knew obviously the chances of it, but yeah, it was really gutting. And then the other embryo that was sitting there was actually inconclusive, so they couldn't tell whether it was a carrier or not. So they had would have had to unfreeze it and then test it and then freeze it again. So with the way the system works in New Zealand, if you haven't had a baby from that first round, you can go and have, well, this was at the time, so it might be different now, so don't quote me on it. We could then go to another round. So we went to another round and we got, I think it was 3 embryos out of that round. And no, it was 3. Yeah. And one of them was a carrier. So one of them was a carrier of the genetic condition. So, and then there was.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
The 2 others that were okay. So then we implanted another one. Or I will say with the egg collection, I think nearly fainted with that egg collection. They had to kind of lay me back and put fluids on me. So yeah, it was a bit full on that second one. But then yeah, they implanted that. That one didn't stick either. So again, that's now two down. They also tested that one and it was actually not a carrier. So then we ended up with two more left. So two haven't stuck, and then we've got two left. So I think it was this September, we implanted the third one, and yay, I was pregnant. So yeah, it was amazing feeling to be pregnant. But then once you're pregnant, you're like, oh, that's right, I've got a whole few weeks to get through, and you need to stay in there. And yeah. So we had all the scans as you go with, and so this was Tyka, and everything seemed to be all good with him. I was a lot more sick this time, a lot more nauseous, a lot more tired with this pregnancy.
Yeah. And how did you find, like, managing, obviously, when you've already got a child? It's, like, so much harder when you're pregnant the next time. So, yeah, talk us through your pregnancy experience this time and how you're feeling, any sort of comparisons, and what did you decide to do for your care and all of that sort of stuff?
Yeah. So I was a lot more tired this time around because I couldn't nap the same. I was working first time around, but in the weekends you could have like the catch up naps, or you get home from work, you can have a wee nap. But there was no napping with Hazel. And Hazel actually was under early intervention, so she was under conductive education. So she was, I think, going to that three times a week. So had to be out of the house three times a week, and that was for a few hours a day. So she had a full-on kind of schedule, then had appointments here and there. Ended up, actually, Hazel's appendix burst, I think it was when I was maybe 10, 11 weeks pregnant. So we ended up being in hospital because of that burst appendix. It ended up being about a month, I think she got out on Christmas Eve. So that was full on, but also it was good in the way that I just had to rest with her in hospital as well. So I had the stress, which wasn't obviously great, but of her with her appendix, but I had that time to rest. So that was probably a kind of good thing in that way, if you can look at a good thing from that. And we actually didn't with Tyka either tell people until about 20 weeks, because we were going to do a amnio. My placenta was across the front, so they couldn't safely do an amnio without probably hitting the placenta. So was at risk of miscarrying a healthy baby. And because we had done the IVF, I was like, okay, let's just keep going, sort of thing. And we also had done the NIPT test as well, and that had come back all clear at, I think it was 11 weeks we did it. So we did that test as well,
Yeah, awesome. And talk us through, like, your thoughts around birth this time. Obviously, last time you were induced and then ended up having a cesarean section. So what were your thoughts with this birth?
So I actually looked into a obstetrician this time around as well. We actually went and saw an obstetrician, and we're looking at going with her for the care. But she actually said, your pregnancy seems quite typical at the moment. They had transferred us through to fetal medicine at the hospital, so we were under obstetricians at the hospital, and that was for the amnio and because of the genetic condition. So we were under the care of the hospital as well anyway. And she said, look, you could just go to a midwife and go to a really great midwife. I mean, all midwives are really great, all amazing. So she actually steered us in that direction, which I really appreciate, because you kind of think an obstetrician would be like, oh yeah, come through me, take your money, that kind of thing. But she was, yeah, really amazing. She gave me a list of who she would recommend, and I rung a couple off that, and it was actually the one on the top of the list, and she said, yep, I can take you, what are you thinking for birth wise? And at that stage I had decided that I wanted another C-section. For me, the decision was the risks with, for me, was with having, not having a C-section, having a vaginal birth after a C-section, because the risks I'd had with Hazel and the things I'd read, I decided C-section. I know my baby's going to be out quick, safe.
Yeah.
And that was just kind of where my head was at. Everyone obviously has their own reasons for different things, different decisions, but that's where I was at. So the midwife was like, yep, I can put you in C-section, that kind of thing. So we were really fortunate. So we then waited for a letter from the hospital to say our date. We got our date, and by this stage Hazel was at preschool, and she was only good with certain people, so she was really picky with people that she liked, sort of thing.
Yeah.
And I think part of it is obviously the medical history, just being in and out of hospital constantly, but also the fact that she, being vision impaired, she's got to trust in you, your touch, your voice, that kind of thing. So she, we had her all booked in. So we turned up at the hospital, and we ended up being on the acute list. So they hadn't put us on the booked list. So we were turned up at, I think, 7 a.m, dropped Hazel at preschool. She was doing a full day instead of a half day. We'd had it all organised. And yeah, acute list. So it got to, I think, about 2 p.m. and we were just like, oh, this is ridiculous. We'd asked right through, is this happening? Is it happening? What's happening? Got to 2 p.m. we were just like, what is going on? Like, we need to pick up our daughter soon. And they were like, oh, they've just gone in to do another birth. You're probably not going to be till this evening. We were like, oh God, we can't, like, can't do this. And that was probably the other part of the reason I went with C-section, was that I could book Hazel in with people to care for her, that I knew she was comfortable with, that I knew they were comfortable with her tube feeding, and everything that goes with looking after Hazel. So then that was a Friday, went home for the weekend. They finally got us on a booked list. My midwife got it all sorted, thankfully. She was amazing. And then Tyke was born the Tuesday. So we, different experience, turn up, put you in a room, get you all the IV line in, all ready to go. I think we were maybe second on the list, and straight into theatre.
Amazing. And how did you find, like, I guess the initial stage this time? How long did you stay in hospital for? What was your sort of initial breastfeeding period like? Did you want to breastfeed this time? Talk us through that.
So with the birth, it was the same stark environment again, same shivering. But when Tyker came out, he was laying, they laid him on my chest, but his breathing was a bit laboured. So the midwife noticed that pretty quickly, and took him off. They gave him a wee bit of oxygen. They told me everything that was going on. I was very calm, and I think because of all the medical stuff I'd been through, I knew that the doctors that were there were quite equipped to look after him. They had all the equipment possible. We were in the best place possible, so I was quite happy. So the NICU doctor was brought down, and they looked after Tyka, and I just lay there while they sewed me up. And then went through after that, and Tyka latched pretty much straight away. He was very comfortable. Like, it was, pretty pretty easy, really. The only thing was I was still numb, like my legs, I couldn't move that well, which is what you have after a C-section or a spinal. And yeah, so he latched really well. So a bit different in that way. We went to a room. We were fortunate enough again to have a private room. And yeah, he seemed to be feeding all right. At that stage, I was like, as long as he's fed, I don't care. Yeah, so I was going to try breastfeeding first because it's often easier in the way of you're not having to heat up bottles, you're not having to clean bottles, that kind of thing. So there was one night where he just wasn't getting very much food off me, so they gave him a little bit of formula, which I was open to and happy to, and went with that. And then once we got home, he still wasn't getting enough from me, so we started mix feeding a wee bit just to make sure he had enough, because he had dropped a bit of his birth weight. But he soon caught up, and then we just stopped the formula, and he just went fully breastfed. So I think it must have been after the C-section, just took a wee while for my milk to kind of come in properly. And but then he ended up being a very chunky baby from breastfeed.
Amazing. And how did you go adjusting to having two children and obviously bringing Taika into Hazel's world? And talk us through that.
I, up until I had Taika, I was sleeping next to Hazel. So she was, we were co-sleeping, and she relied on me. I think even to the point where some nights she was sleeping on my arm, so my arm was getting numb. So we thought about a month before, like, do we try and wean her off me, sort of thing? You know, like, do we want the month? Last month that I have it just me and Hazel to be doing that, or should we just go cold turkey, because it's all going to change anyway with having another child in the house. So we decided that we'd just go cold turkey. And so when I was in the hospital, because I was in the hospital for a couple of days post C-section, my husband had her at home, and she was screaming, which is so heartbreaking. And then when we got home, she was screaming at night, and I had to hold myself back on the couch, because at this point I was on the couch with the baby, with Taika in the bassinet, because then I was far enough away from her that we weren't going to disturb each other. So she was just screaming, and I was in tears, because I just wanted to go and give her a big cuddle, but I knew that if I did, it would just stuff the whole process. So it took a few days, but she then was fine with my husband. My husband now co-sleeps with her, so my husband next to her. So to the point now that if I go in there at night, she's like, what are you doing in here? And it just upsets it all. And she's like, get out. And my husband's like, yeah, no, we're not going to do that again. You stay out of there. So, yes,
Yeah, isn't it funny how they get like so used to having one person there, and then even though she wasn't on her own and she had her dad there, like she's so used to having you. But it's nice to hear that she's switched and she's able to be with him now, which is nice.
Yeah, no, definitely. He's very good at winning her over. I remember as a baby, she didn't like anyone but me, or want to be with anyone but me, but she won him over by having he had showers with her, and she just loved the water and loved the showers. So so he's very good at patient, which is a great
amazing. And how did you go over the next couple of months? Talk us through your birth recovery and adjustment to life as a mum of two, and your feeding, and just life in general.
It was a bit of a definite a change in the way of Hazel had just turned, she was just about to turn five, so we had actually decided that we didn't want we'd hold her back and not have her go to school at 5. We'd wait until she was 6. So we carried on doing her early intervention stuff. So it was about getting out of the house and getting to that. So recovery wise, my husband fortunately was able to take, I think it was about 5 weeks off work. So he was at home to help me through that first 5 weeks. So kind of he looked after Hazel and I looked after the baby as our priority. And then obviously I still was able to have cuddles with Hazel. I wasn't able to lift Hazel, which I found really hard because I'd want to just pick her up and give her a big cuddle and I couldn't do that. So I had to wait for my husband to put her on my knee to have a cuddle. And and also dividing your time when your child has had you 24/7, that was really hard. And I remember being really emotional around that side of things as well, because you just, you'd find it so hard to divide your time.
And obviously I know now that you've got little Amaya, and she's about 6 months old. So take us through, the decision to have another baby. How far sort of through your journey were you? How old were Hazel and Tyka? And take us through that decision.
So Tyka would have been about 1.5 when it was, probably about 1.5 when we decided that we would like another child if we could. It was a lot of the fact was that we had one embryo sitting there in the freezer. So we were kind of like, oh, what do we do with it? Do we have another child? Do we not? But I was very much, we both were like, let's do it. Let's try, knowing full well that we had had two that hadn't stuck previous. So, and by that stage, we were supposed to have it, I think, in the December, the transfer, but ended up that I ovulated early, earlier than they'd expected. So I then couldn't do the transfer. So that was in the December. So they moved it to the January. So I also had to wean Tyka from breastfeeding. So he was still feeding up until, 1.5. And I found that really hard because I was like, well, Tyka could be my last child and I'm weaning him because I have to wean him, not because I want to wean him or we're ready to wean. Ended up that he was quite happy to wean, like no issues with him. He was like, give me that bottle, I'll take that, I'm fine, sort of thing. So it was more me and my emotions. So I had to do that because of the medication I was having to take for the transfer. I could have done a natural transfer, but I'd done a natural transfer once before and it didn't stick, where Tyka's was not the natural one. So I decided we'll go with what worked with Tyka. So that's kind of, I was like, well, I've got to do my best foot forward sort of thing. So so we ended up January we did the transfer and ended up finding out I was pregnant, which was amazing, and I was so over the moon. Before this, I said to myself, oh, I'm only going to have two children. I'm not going to have more than two sort of thing. And then obviously you change. So happy to have three now. But did that. Found out I was pregnant, over the moon. And then at 6 weeks, I actually was really nauseous, like right from pretty much day one when they did the transfer, it felt like almost. Like, and so tired, like on the, I said I was tired with the other ones, but I was, it's next level. I was like on the couch trying to parent, like lying down. And at this stage with a 1.5 year old, which is just, and a boy, and they're just full noise and full speed ahead. So you've got boys, so you would know as well. So then I was just really sick. And then at 6 weeks, I had a bleed. And I went to the bathroom, had a bleed. I was like, oh God, because it was a reasonable size bleed. I had no pain, and it wasn't the same feeling in the same kind of situation as the miscarriage I'd had. But I rang the midwife straight away and told her that I'd had a bleed. And she actually said to me, have you got any cramping? And I was like, no. And she's like, well, it could actually be all right. There's other people or other women that have had this experience and everything's been okay. But let's book you in for a scan tomorrow. Because by this stage, I think it was late in the afternoon. So I had to kind of wait till the next day. And then I think I had a scan booked with Fertility Associates for the Friday, just like a routine, I think, 7 week one or something like that. So we did a scan anyway the Thursday because she was like, the midwife was like, yeah, you don't want to wait. And I was like, no, I don't want to wait. So went and had a scan and had told the lady that was scanning me everything that was going on sort of thing. And she was like, well, you know, we're not sure what we're going to see. Let's just kind of like, let's see. And so she scanned me and there was little Amaya like dancing around in there quite happy. But right beside her was this big hemorrhage area, and it ended up being about, I think, 8 centimetres. Maybe at that time it might have been only, you know, 4 or 5 or maybe something. It wasn't as big. It got bigger. That could have come away and taken a mire with it. So that was really, like, gutting that it was still there, that it hadn't just, you know, like that I hadn't had it go. So obviously I'd had one lot go, but there was still a bit remaining. So kind of from there on I was just like really nervous all the time, as you would be. And then we ended up at I think about 12 weeks. We did the NIPT test at 11 weeks and everything was fine. I had no bleeding after that, so it all stopped. So no bleeding at all. 11 weeks did the NIPT, well, might have been a bit earlier than that actually, did the NIPT test. That came back all clear. Around 12 weeks, we actually went to Australia for physical therapy for my daughter, a place called Napa. And so we were over in Australia for 3 weeks and I actually had a moment in Australia where I actually had really bad stomach pain, but I think it was more bowel pain than it was anything else. But it was only one night and I didn't get too concerned by it because I kind of feel like I'd had that pain before, but when I wasn't pregnant. So other than that, it was, yeah, it was quite full on because my daughter was doing physical therapy daily. So my husband and I, my husband went fortunately and we jumped in and out doing it and then came back and we'd booked in for a amnio through fetal medicine again. So we'd been transferred across to fetal medicine again because of the high risk pregnancy and the same obstetrician scanned me again and she said that she would be hesitant doing an amnio because of the hemorrhage area, and by that stage it was 8 centimeters and it could just come away at any moment. So we were like, okay, let's leave it again. So second time, no amnio, and just go, well, we've had the IVF, let's carry on sort of thing. And then there were a couple of other areas that she was like, these could be fibroids or they could be hemorrhage areas, what she couldn't quite tell, like other little areas. So we then carried on, and so again didn't tell people till about 20 weeks because we'd gone through that whole process again. And yeah, it was, from then it was actually not too bad the rest of the pregnancy until probably maybe 35 weeks or something. I had really bad back pain and it slowly got worse over time. And you know, when you're pregnant, you kind of think, oh, you're going to have back pain, you know, it's kind of normal. And I thought just because I've got two kids that I'm now lifting that, you know, maybe that's why I've got sort of bad back. Went to my chiropractor and he kind of helped me out a wee bit, and then I'd walk out of there and I'd be okay. But then, you know, a few hours later it would be sore again. I struggled to actually get out of bed without, like, I'm trying to launch myself out of bed. It was so painful. And like, talked to the midwife about it, and she referred me to the hospital physio, saw them, did some exercises, but nothing really kind of helped. And then Amaya was a booked C-section again. So this time they actually booked me, which was great. And got there, everything ran smoothly. Got into theatre, lay down on the table. They opened me up and I heard them going, "Oh, what's this?" And I was like, "That doesn't sound good." Mm-hmm. And I had two arteries like running down the front, opened me up. So fortunately, when they opened me up, they didn't nick one. But they're like, "This is weird. Never seen it before." Turns out my uterus had twisted right around.
Oh, wow.
So apparently very rare it happens. And I heard them go, "We need another obstetrician." So they had to get another obstetrician in. They had to clamp arteries. They had to twist Amaya back around to then be able to get her out. So they got her out safely, and I felt obviously the tugging and the pulling that you usually feel, but probably on a higher level because they were tugging and twisting and pulling. And she came out safely. She was quite happy. They showed him to me, but in that time they had pulling and pushing around my stomach, and I had had nothing to eat because you need to fast. I was trying to vomit, dry retching, and that already given me anti-nausea when I first got in there because I just always need it when they lay me down. I get because the blood pressure goes down. So they were giving me more anti-nausea, but it wasn't actually helping. And I was just it was not very nice at all. And they showed me Amaya, and I was like looking out the corner of my eye. I was like, "Oh, yep, cool. She's safe. She's healthy. She's all good."
Yeah.
And then the anaesthetist was like, "I think we should put you under. Are you okay to go under?" I was like, "Yeah, whatever. Put me under.
Yeah.
I don't need to be awake." So, she was all good. They put me under. My husband went out at that point because you're not allowed to be in once someone goes under. But he looked back as he's walking out. And this is gory details. you might want to censor it, I'm not sure. But yeah, all my insides were sitting out because they had to obviously, to be able to get Amaya out, that. So
yeah,
he's now traumatized for life
from
that.
Yeah.
So I'm not allowed to tell that story around him ever again. He stopped me. So I was like, fair enough. But so then he's out there with Amaya and in his arms, and then two other kids that are at school and preschool, I think, at that point, or it might have been school holidays school holidays. So my brother's sister was down looking after Hazel, and Tyker was at preschool. So he was sitting there, and he's like, three kids, he's like, "I didn't need to see that side." I hope everything's okay. So they fixed me all up and sorted it all out, and then wheeled me back in. But I remember coming to and just being so tired, I couldn't keep my eyes open tired. They put Amaya, I think they latched Amaya, and she latched pretty quickly as well, like Taika. She was quite happy, and I was just tired, and that's about it after it, really.
And did you have, like, you obviously had no other indication of like when your uterus may have twisted, or like they obviously didn't pick it up at any other stage in your pregnancy?
No, and I had a scan, a late scan. I feel like it was 34 weeks or 35 weeks, and I hadn't noticed in that. So whether it had been slowly twisting, or because I kind of think it wouldn't have done it all of a sudden, or whether it's something that you can't see on scans, I'm not sure. But yeah, no indication at all. And fortunately now I'm glad I had a C-section, because she wouldn't have been able to get out because of it being twisted around. She wouldn't have been able to so and the pain was just but again, thought it was just normal back pain, but
yeah
no
yeah. And how did you go in the hospital this time with your C-section recovery, and how long did you spend in there before going home?
So I was just one night in Christchurch Public, and I actually got up. They weren't going to get me up until the next day, but I actually wanted to get out of bed. So I think maybe about 4 o'clock, I ended up back in my room. So I got up maybe at like 8 or 9 at night, once everyone had left, that sort of thing, family had left, and I was like, I want to get up out of bed, I want to move, like, because I just, and they were like, oh, well, it says not till the morning, and I was like, please, can I just, and they let me anyway. So I got up, I had a shower, I felt so much better after I'd had a shower and got moving, because last time I got really bad like water retention after my C-section, which I ended up getting this time as well, to the point where like they were just bursting and like painful. It was really weird, like fluid retention, and it was for a few, few weeks after. But yeah, getting up and moving actually made me feel so much better. And then so I was there for a day and then transferred to Rolleston. They had a unit there that we could go to for I think I was 2 nights there. So transferred out there, which was amazing, and the midwives were amazing there, and it was just like our own little wee sanctuary in the room, and just chilling out. It was nice to be able to have that bonding time with Amaya when you've got two other kids at home.
That's one thing I wish I did with Ali, is like just take that time and go to the birth center. Like, your baby or your child is not going to remember it.
No, exactly.
Yeah.
And I was actually talking to someone recently, and they said that they actually said, can you please not bring the other child in tomorrow, or like just not come in tomorrow, just leave me to it. What you think, oh, that's a bit nasty. But then you're actually like, no, that makes total sense. Like, just chill out and have that time, and bond with your baby, and just, you're going to be soon home in the thick of it. So,
Yeah, amazing. And how did you go once you got home? So what was it like, mum of three, introducing Amaya to the other two? Yeah, take us through the next few weeks.
Yeah, so I feel like going from two to three was harder than going from one to two, I think, because you're outnumbered. That's the biggest thing. You can't, like, if they are all crying at once, you can only go to two of them, really. So that was harder. We had my husband's sister was here from Wellington, so she was here for a couple of days, and then she went back to work, had to go back to work, and then it was us, and my parents were around if we needed them and that sort of thing, but a lot of the time you're just kind of getting yourself sorted and your new routine sorted. So my husband tended to pick up the slack because he took another 5 weeks off work this time. Fortunately, we were able to do that. Not everybody is. And he was watching the other two while I had Amaya. Hazel at this stage was at school, so it was actually good timing because the school holidays had just been and she'd just started back at school on that Monday, so my husband would drop her to school and then have my son Taika at home, and then he would go to preschool some days as well, so we actually got a bit of time just Tan and I and Amaya, so that was really nice to have that time just because the kids were at preschool and school. So
amazing. And how have you felt recovery-wise this time around?
So I thought it was going to be a hard recovery because of what happened. But actually, it's probably been my best and easiest recovery. So the medication, I was off reasonably quickly, maybe within the first week after. I had reduced down to maybe just a little bit of Pamol when as needed. Yes, scarring wise, and pain and like lifting and that sort of stuff, I felt like I could do that a lot sooner than the others. And scarring's been actually okay. I did have one area in my scarring that had gone a bit funny, but then it kind of sorted itself out as the weeks went on. So I think that's a big thing, is like you look at your scar at first and you're like, oh my god, what's going on there? And then it kind of, your body obviously naturally kind of sorts it out. But obviously if it looks really gnarly, you need to show your midwife or your sort of thing.
Cool. And you're about 6 months in now, so how has the journey to now been? How is Amaya going, and what does life look like for you now?
So Amaya is wonderful. I'd say that about all my kids though. But she is, she's been feeding well. I haven't had to mix feed with her, which is really fortunate. It was close to possibly needing to, because she had lost a wee bit of weight, but we just kind of persevered. And because I had the same amazing midwife as Taika, she kind of knew my journey and my process of what happens, that it kind of drops a bit and then we're all fine. So Amaya's all fine now, chunky, very long baby, so she's very happy. Feeding is ever an easy journey. I think there's so many ups and downs with it. Whatever way you feed is never going to be easy. I find that, I think I co-sleep with Amaya because she slept through the night from about, I feel like, maybe 6 weeks to about 3 months, and then she decided, nah, I don't feel like doing that anymore. So she's awake a lot in the night, so I co-sleep with her and feed her kind of on demand, and I do that during the day, feed her on demand as well, because that's kind of what works for me. Other people are all about routine, and I just go with it at the moment while it works, until it doesn't work, and then I'll make changes.
You just gotta do what's best for you, right?
Yes, exactly that.
Amazing. Well, thank you so much, Kate, for coming on the podcast and sharing your story with us today. It's been really interesting, you know, all of the different facets of your story, and I've just really enjoyed talking to you, so thank you for taking the time.
Oh, thank you for inviting me. I've really enjoyed talking about it. To be honest, I've never really talked about it fully, so it's actually quite nice to get it out there. And because my journey has been probably quite different to others, it's quite nice if there's, I mean, for me, it's about if there's someone that could be going through something similar to something that I have, that they actually know they're not alone, because it can be quite a lonely journey. Is what I have found at times.
Absolutely. And I obviously will tag you in the social posts and encourage anyone who's sort of experiencing something similar to reach out, because it's so nice to find a community through these ways as well.
Anyone is welcome to message me anytime. And that's what has happened with, like, with Hazel having her Bear syndrome. People have messaged me about that. I'm an open book.
Thanks for tuning into this week's episode of Kiwi Birth Tales. I appreciate you being here, and I'd love to hear from you. If you want to find me at Kiwi Birth Tales on Instagram, or you can send me an email, Jordan, Jordyn, @kiwibirthtales.com. I will be back with another beautiful birth story for you very soon.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Hi, I'm Ando.
And I'm Fer.
And we host Niñas Bien podcast.
We want to invite you to listen to our show.
Niñas Bien means good girls in Spanish, but you have to know that this is not a podcast for good girls.
Or for girls at all. It is a comedy podcast, so everyone is welcome to listen.
We talk about sex, relationships, technology.
We recommend movies and TV shows and discuss pop culture in general.
And there is Chisme Ajeno too.
A section we have just to gossip about everyone. So you'll find something you like here.
And you'll practice your Spanish.
The cleanest Spanish you'll find, we promise.
And if you already hablas español,
vamos a ser tus nuevas amigas. We'll be your friends for the non-Spanish speakers.
New episodes every Monday and Thursday.
Hosted by Acast and available to all audio platforms.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.